Hola! Welcome to Dismantling Diet Culture. Fuck being calladita, the only Spanglish anti-diet podcast that teaches you from a sociological lens, feminism, and intuitive eating coaching to dismantle diet culture. I'm your host, Dr. Hortensia Jimenez, and I am passionate about dismantling diet culture and helping you heal your relationship with food and your body. I'm a mother, daughter, comadre, amiga, community member, professor, health coach, and published author. On this show, I share my personal experience with diet culture, tips and strategies, and educational content to help you understand diet culture and systems of oppression so that you can have the tools to challenge diet culture. Current and future generations do not deserve to inherit your diet culture trauma, and I'm here to help you. If you're on a mission to heal your body and food traumas and embody your authentic self unapologetic, welcome to Dismantling Diet Culture. Fuck being calladita. Hola, bienvenidos a Dismantling Diet Culture, Fuck Being Calladita. This is your host, Dr. Hortensia Jimenez. Today, I have the pleasure and honor to start off the year 2024 with such an amazing guest that I love seeing his reels and connecting to the land and the farm and seeing his kids. It brings me so much grounding and so much joy. So I'm super excited to share this space with Zach. Let me go ahead and introduce our guest. Zach Ben is a sixth generation Dene farmer from Shiprock, New Mexico. Together with his wife, Zach co-founded BD Baby Foods LLC during the pandemic with the goal of providing organic, locally grown, and shelf-stable traditional foods during the early childhood period. BD Baby Foods LLC grows and processes traditional foods on their 16-acre farm plot in Cadiali, New Mexico. Zach aims to address structural barriers impeding his community from accessing food through the healing practices of community farming and entrepreneurship. Bienvenido. Welcome, Zach.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Jimenez. It's been, been a while, and we're like really looking forward to being able to, you know, be a part of your episode. So thank you for having us. Really looking forward to this conversation.
Thank you. No, I want to thank you for trusting the space and our audience and our community to come on and share a little bit about yourself and what led to this amazing BD Baby Foods.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for, again, just allowing us to share the story that we hope would inspire other, you know, farmers out there that are beginning in those stages of like in the trenches of, you know, how do I start, you know, farming? What does that look like? And why do I want to farm? And I think there's been a huge like uptick of, you know, being able to be independent, but yet sustainable, especially across, you know, the BIPOC communities and indigenous communities across, you know, the United States. I feel like, you know, what does that look like to have this resurgence of, you know, agriculture? What does it mean? And how can we, you know, use it to our benefit within these communities where we don't have that access to healthy traditional foods? And I think that's something that we felt very, very, it hit home for us, I guess, is the best way that I can describe it. Because back into and just right after the pandemic, even growing up to the pandemic, and I say the pandemic because that's when we were expecting our first child. My wife and I, we found out that we were pregnant. And so we thought to ourselves, like, wow, this is an amazing opportunity. It's going to be a new chapter in our lives. And then you started hearing those, the baby food company starting to have problems with heavy metals in their manufacturing process. We started hearing, you know, stories of, you know, the lack of food that's available even during that time, you know, in grocery stores, and living on the reservation. You know, I grew up, stretching $10 to last us for the week to feed my family of six. And I felt like, you know, what can we do to prevent these issues from hitting home, this home that we're creating now, this family that we're starting now together? You know, what can we do to prevent a lot of these issues and this poverty mindset, this ability to move out of trauma and heal? Together as parents, as providers, and as farmers And so that's when we started Bitty Baby Foods during that time. And we felt like, that is a sense of, that senses came out because of parenthood, but most importantly, like, what are our children going to eat? What are they going to consume, both visually, through their what they digest and nutrition, to what they're learning about the world? What are we going to show them, and how are we going to have them, teach them about the world in that sense, using the farm as that foundation? Here we are. So that's, I guess, basically, what we felt as parents, and being able to provide this option and an opportunity for our children to have that access, and now our community has that access to this healthy traditional foods of that's created on our farm.
It's so beautiful. Thank you for sharing. I love how you said, not only you're addressing a gap and issues in the reservation, but you also said I'm moving away from trauma, right? And in healing through farming and connecting to the land and our ancestors. That's powerful. It's so powerful. It makes me want to
Yes.
cry. How grounding and healing it is to connect to the land and to be able to cultivate and create life and food.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. And then you can hear that passion, that love that's instilled into not only just the story, but our products. And I think, and the reason why we went through an LLC route than rather than staying in a grassroots organizational structure was that, there are no other agriculture producers that have an LLC or a business status on the reservation of on the Navajo Nation. What are we doing to actively dismantle those systems of oppression? And that's by being a part of them. So that way, when we go through that process, we will understand what other producers are going through, what other entrepreneurs, especially other small business owners or developers of small businesses on reservation lands, what it looks like to go through that process. Why is there a cliff for these entrepreneurs in this area? And I say this a lot. When you're dealing with reservation business, you're dealing with reservation economics, resonomics. And that's different from Western economics. And I say that because, you're dealing with tribal trust land. You don't own that. You cannot claim that as an asset. Therefore, you cannot use that as, leverage to get in loans and startup loans and capital to run with. No, you can't. You gotta walk. And so, I think those things we've really felt in our beginning years. And so, being able to, again, be a part of those systems so that way we can change it from the inside. And that way, and that's what I say, entrepreneurship is healing. The farm is healing. This the food that we create is, all healing because, we're building, we're dismantling those systems, but yet we're rebuilding them into our children to inherit that generational wealth that we're building, rather than inherit the continued traumas that were inflicted on our and our people and our ancestors, our intergenerational households of today, and we're breaking those cycles using these structures now that we're building.
Wow, this is so powerful. And you are a trailblazer, and also you're creating history by doing this. I don't know. I see your reels. I see how busy your wife and your kids are always. You guys are always busy out in the farm, but I'm sure you have those moments where you're like, wow, what we're doing is transcendent. Dental, I don't know, in that word, like it transcends, it's going to transcend so many generations, and it's healing all these past generations too.
Exactly. And I think, when we started this LLC, we decided, we're not going to build into it like a pyramid scheme for, a capitalistic mindset, or like, oh, we want to look at this as like, this is how much we can profit. No, we're looking at it like, okay, if we sell this much, okay, our first year was like that. It was like, okay, if we sell it this much, oh, that's too pricey. It's quality food though, and we definitely want a return of investment because That return of investment will allow us to, of course, build out more acreage, build out more programs, build out more access. And we felt like, okay, what does that look like? And that's when it went into, you know, teaming up with a registered dietitian. Her name is Danae Bex with Tumbleweed Nutrition. I'm sure you follow her. And, you know, being able to understand what diet cultures look like currently, because, you know, working in as a producer, yet you're creating these products, you know, people are not familiarized with traditional foods as much as you would think. And so we romanticize that a lot. You know, we're culturally rich. We have a heritage that we come from. We have ancestors that, you know, guide us, but yet we don't give reverence to that.
That's right.
And why is that? Because we're so distracted of the modern day, you know, contributing to Americana is what we're so busy in. And it distracts us from, you know, understanding what grounding means and being able to, you know, that's where we have health inputs come into place. You have, you know, obesity, you have diabetes, you have, you know, substance abuse, alcoholism, you have all these monsters coming out and about. And so in our creation stories, we have what we call the twin warriors, Nyantnezgan and Tukubaja's Chin, that is Monster Slayer and Born for Water. So these two twin warriors, they, you know, were they, their people were headed in that direction. And so they felt like, okay, what can we do to, you know, prevent these monsters and these ailments and, you know, the guidance that doesn't exist to, you know, guide our people into prosperity. How come we're like that now? And so they traveled to find their father. You know, their mother kept that secret from them. And she finally was like, your father is the sun. If you want to go see him, you have to go travel to see him. And so they, you know, they went out, they traveled to see their son, their father, the sun. And as they traveled, they went through many obstacles, and they found, you know, a lot of information out there. They found a lot of wisdom. They found a lot of ceremonies and tools that they can bring back to their people as they traveled to the sun. And when they got to the sun, then they're like, okay, you know, I am your father, but, you know, it's good that we've met. Here's some tools. Here's some knowledge. Take this back to your people. Because look, now that you've, you know, spent that time traveling here, your people are in disparity. Your people are being hurt. And they turned around. He turned them around and said, look down there at the people. And he looked, they twin warriors looked down at the people and they were like, oh no, like these monsters are, you know, obliterating the communities, terrorizing these people. And they fell to their knees and they started crying. They said, why is this happening? And the son brought them back up and said, you don't need to, you know, you've let out that emotion. You're sad. Yes, let that out. But now use these tools and this knowledge that you've learned through this journey of, you know, getting to me and the weapons that I give you now to protect your community, protect your mom. And then he sent them back down and they annihilated all these monsters before. You know, we have, you know, lice, we have cold, we have hunger, we have old age. They kept those alive. And now when you think about it, fast forward to now, you have all these other monsters coming off of these guys. These guys were taught and left because they begged so that way they can teach us humans to not be ignorant to ourselves and the way we exist. And so now, fast forward to now, you have other elements, other monsters deriving off of these four. So what are we doing to actively, you know, protect ourselves and our community? And so that's where, you know, we go back to these tools of, you know, and I like to say this in the sexy term of like regenerative agriculture, but those are, you know, ways in which that indigenous people that are familiar with these lands, that are these homelands to us, you know, that's our methods. That's our design and that's our model. And that's what something that was taught to us by our ancestors and our deities. And that's why, you know, when we work with these methods nowadays, that's what will protect the land. That's what will protect our food. And most importantly, our seeds, the seeds of what we eat and the seeds of our children. And that's what will, you know, take them to prosperity. And so, you know, we got to protect that as the twin warriors protected their communities. And so with that protection, you know, that's where, you know, that mindset comes in of like having that balance of like, okay, how do we combat diabetes? How do we combat obesity where, you know, we have the highest rates of that in the country on the Navajo Nation, the highest rates of type 2 diabetes in the country. How do we combat that? And so what does our access to food look like? And so when you look at it, it's, a dollar, you have people that are traveling in from, hour plus with barely any fuel in their vehicles and maintenance done, and they're having to go to this grocery store on the reservation where their access to food that's sustainable, so that has a long shelf life basically, is, spam. You got corned beef hash, you got potatoes, you got flour. This is something that was brought up to me, was like, that's war food. We're not in war, but we're still eating that war food that we've become dependent on since the conflict between the US government and indigenous people. We're still in that mindset. How do we break out of that? And that's where, a lot of like bitty baby foods came into play to be able to how would you say, I guess, refamiliarize your people with our first foods, and being able to provide that education, that nutritional education, recipe development and implementation, and being able to focus on our early childhood areas, so that way we know that our food is impacting our young ones, so they can then set that preference for having, healthy traditional food over, processed and preserved foods that are not familiar with our people.
Thank you so much for sharing that warrior story. It's so beautiful, and that connection to the land and connection to the ancestors and the seeds and everything is just so beautiful. And I also appreciate what you said of like us being cautious of not romanticizing our culture foods. You're absolutely correct. That's something to continue to unpack, right? Because when we romanticize our culture foods, we might fall in this trap of not recognizing the systemic barriers, right? And you noted them really well, that in the reservation, there are so many barriers and so many social problems, right, that are not inherent to the people, but because of settler colonialism, and they still exist. And here you are working to dismantle this. Can you share with our audience how does a day look like for you and your family in the farm? That's another thing, right? Let's not romanticize, because I know that 30, 60-second or 90-second reel is like, I can romanticize it, right? But I also know, right, that this is hard work. This is extremely hard work, and I'm sure there's a lot of sacrifices. I'm sure there's a lot of challenges out there. So tell us, how does a day look like for you?
I think
I'm sure they're all different,
yeah
but
yeah oh no, I think right now we're in that stage of our lives where we have two under two, so it's like having the toddler, we're having our baby, and she's 6 month old, she's a 6 month old now, and then our son is 2.5 years old, and he was the inspiration for bitty baby foods, and so now we get to continue that on with our, I guess, with our daughter now. And so it's like, he's our first human case study, we like to say. But
that's funny.
so I think a day in the life of the Bens is like, being able to give gratitude for how far we've come, and how far we've or hard how hard we've worked, I guess. And this, it takes a lot of work. It does, honestly, to raise children, to start two organizations. We have an LLC, the Bitty Baby Foods. We have a 501c3, the BEN Initiative. BEN is acronym for the Birth Environment and Nutrition. And so we started these two entities because, we want to understand, dynamic and how that works. And so that's something that we practice every day with our children, is that dynamic, there's no gender roles here. There's only, if it needs to be done, do it. And being able to teach that to our children, being able to teach them that here at home and on the farm. If dad can cook, mom can cook. If dad can run the chainsaw, mom can run the chainsaw, those are things like, we share with our children. We educate them on, that outlook of having balance. We can definitely feel like, with all like the problems and the negativity in the world, we feel like, this is how you would, you know, problem solve and find a solution for a lot of, and that's trauma based, you know, being able to always be the problem solver for your family dysfunction. And I think, you know, growing up in that mindset, you know, I truly feel like, you know, every day that I have with my children is a healing experience because I am able to not lash out on them or belittle them for, you know, simply, you know, we're in that potty training phase now. We're in that era of like, you know, not too much sugar, you know, like, you know, here's some other foods that you can use. You know, having them teach them about, you know, their own emotions, like, you know, to have that not necessarily control, but that fluidity of being able to move in and about and knowing yourself and being able to, you know, not just project something, but actually feel that thing and you know, talk about it and be vocal about it and have that balance in your life to be able to do so. Unlike, you know, my childhood where, you know, I was, you know, belittled or what have you. And I think, you know, those are things that we're changing now as parents, we're changing now for our children. And that's what the day looks like for us, to be able to provide that warmth of love, but also saying, okay, here's a challenge and we're going to take it, you know, take it together. And this is how we'll, you know, get through that challenge together as mom and dad or as a family. And this is how, you know, that's how that day looks like. And
I love
yeah.
that. I love how you are weaving in the intersections of your identities, you know, of being a farmer and a parent and a partner and a husband, you know, brother and everything, all at once. And we live in a capitalist society, you know, and white supremacy is so embedded in our society that really forces us or pressures us to compartmentalize ourselves. Like, you're this or this. You can't do all this. And you're that embodiment of all of it at once. Like, you're the farmer and the parent, and you're socializing your children, you're transmitting the culture, you're the food, the different gender role bending that children can continue to do. So it's just beautiful to hear you share this and to see that you're living, like, I don't know, can you say, are you living a dream come true? Are you living the life that you desire? Did you see yourself doing this?
I love that question because, you know, no, I did not see myself, you know, being a full-time farmer. I farmed all my life. I'm a sixth generation farmer from Shiprock, New Mexico. And you know, our children are the seventh in training. And I feel like, you know, I feel that every day. I feel, you know, just that sense of like, okay, we've worked so hard to come to where we're at. Now cherish it, now protect it. And keep building onto it. So, I feel like, you know, the reason why I love this question so much is that I'm a sand painter. I do, you know, ritualistic and within the ceremony of sand painting where we use natural pigments to create ephemeral paintings ritualistically in the ceremonial setting. But also I take some of those designs so that way I can then use a modern or contemporary way of working with the sand, and so that way you know you can mount it on the wall. But you know that's what I thought I saw myself doing growing up. My father was an artist. I was an artist. You can Google my name and you can see a lot of the artwork that I've done out there. But you know that turned into like using that artistic way of like, okay, it's easy to, you know, get a gallery show, sell a piece, to walk the subconsciousness of an individual and make a sale as you mirror that back to them. That is art, our artists as a job. You know, it's easy stuff. Like, hey, my name's Zach Bann, I'm selling this piece for this much. It's a beautiful piece. It has, you know, sand in there, it has Navajo cultures in there. It's alive and well today, but that's easy stuff because you're only impacting an individual. You're not impacting a community. How do you do that as an artist? Well, You can have a gallery show, you can set up installations, but for me, that wasn't enough. It wasn't fulfilling because a lot of my audiences were white, were, European. They weren't my people. But I thought to myself, like, what does it mean to be to be the role of an artist, to have the ability to walk the subconsciousness of a community, reflect that back to them, and heal with that reflection? And that's where my medium changed. My water is the paint, the land is my pigment, and my paintbrush is a shovel.
Oh my gosh.
And my children are that canvas now to be able to, have that foundation, and they get to go out there and enjoy those colors of nature, to thrive in nature's aesthetics, not survive like I did, and my partner and she did, in our childhood. So that's how we see ourselves being able to, I guess, bring that ability back to our people, starting here on the farm with our children, and moving that and growing horizontally rather than or like I said, that pyramid scheme of things. So that's how
Wow.
we see our growth. Yes.
Again, it's like you almost brought me to tears. I had no idea that you were an artist. And of course, I went on Google right now and sambenstudios.com, everyone, and looking at your artwork here, it's so beautiful. And I love, again, think that a theme in this conversation is the weaving of our gifts and talents and identities. And as an artist and what you're doing in the land, it's hermosísimo. It's so beautiful. I love it. It's so healing. And it's also an invitation for folks who, like me, who don't see themselves as artists, that we create art with anything that we do, right? It's how we see things and our intentionality behind it. So thank you for this gift.
Yeah, of course. And I think, as artists of today, we're healers, especially in today's society. I feel like, as healers, we're able to heal, of course, that intergenerational trauma, historical trauma, but most importantly, ourselves. Ourselves, so that way we can, provide that type of future for our children and our children's children. And I feel like, being able to use this medium to provide that to an audience that will not only just get to visualize it, but digest it. And I think, that's something that, that healing work, that's where you'll be able to have that connection immediately. So this food is more than just a, like, oh, this is a recipe for this, and this is how you put it together. But it's, there's purpose to it. There's intention, there's love. And that's what we are creating, and that's what people are healing with when they digest the special food that we're creating here on here while we, and this is just goes into a much more, out of the philosophical side, like, when we're working with the land, when we're working with the water, we're protecting those land rights, we're protecting those water rights. And that's why I say, when we're a part of this systemic structure of, having this incorporation status as an LLC, we're being able to use that data to then, fight against, still to this day, the US government. Because right now they said, like, we don't know how to quantify your water rights. So because of that, do you really need them at all? Things like that. What are we doing to prevent those issues from affecting our children? It starts now. And being able to farm the lands that we have today, that's land back. That's land back is what you're, when you're working with what you have today, not looking for more, because currently, right now, data wise, like, 5% of our farmers farm every year, and 3% of that is for alfalfa. 2% of that is for actual food that is then just probably donated back into the community, families, ceremony, and that's it. That's very low. That's out of like 15,000 acres for one community alone. And not only that, but 70% to 75% of that number is like 65 and older farmers. Where are the youth? And that's, I think that's the number one question that is asked around in chapter houses here on the reservation, community hall meetings, but they're there, but they're struggling. They don't have the healthy mindset to say, I'm going to farm this year. I'm going to farm it successfully because, I want to provide food for my community. Yes, some of them do that, but it's only for a year, maybe 2 years at most. Then they fall off that cliff, as entrepreneurs do, being able to look for resources that don't exist or are not marketed towards you as an indigenous producer, a farmer. Those are things that we are losing every day, that when that journey that you take to protect those land rights, protect those water rights, they slip out of our hands. And so that goes with language, that goes with our songs and prayers, that goes with culture. And those are things that I feel like, if we have our children nowadays be a part of that, like I say, that foundation, then their connection will not be severed, as our, as we're headed in that direction. And so, there's so much, like I said, there's so much more to that, but I think that's a good summary of, like, this is how we're able to use these structures, use it to our advantage because we built it with that intention and that forethought and that experience of, like, this is what we want to, use to build up the ecosystem there in our communities, rather than disadvantage them or adverse them or completely rely on that ecosystem to sustain us as an agriculture producer.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for sharing this. What would you say is one of those circumstances where that you wish that more people knew about, or that or misconceptions that people may have?
In the first years, it was ne not necessarily a misconception. It was more of a challenge of, like, having to navigate the pedagogy of oppression. Like, and I say that because, when you are surrounded by people that, see you prosper, it's hard for them to cheer for you. So what's easier? What's easier is what they've been taught, and that's to, this crabs in a bucket mentality, which then led into imposter syndrome for us. Like, are we doing the right thing? We can't be selling our own foods to our people. Why don't we provide it then? Why don't we become SNAP and WIC certified, where we get to use these social benefits programs to, provide that for our people? That's not enough. You're not doing enough. You're even your own family come after you. And this is a reality that I feel like a lot of people do face when they head back to their communities, or when we say, where's the youth? They come back home to that. What are we doing to, work through that? And I think that's something that, again, we're teaching our children, is that those boundary settings, being able to have that healthy mindset where you're not completely pulled down by all of those, thoughts and remarks and opinions, because, as long as we're ch raising our children on the farm, and they get to have that experience by, producing their own food, like, being able to have our son farm with us last year, because then that last year's harvest is now being fed to our 6-month-old now as she's being introduced to first foods. Like, wow. Why isn't anybody else doing this? Or why is anybody else supporting this? And those are things that it takes that re-education to refamiliarize our people with those foods, how they are created, the ritualistic parts of that, people don't want to talk about or acknowledge, is the spiritual aspects of working with those foods, working with the land, working with the water, and working with those elements. And that's why I say, nature's aesthetics can be healing, can be nourishing, to be a part of them. And those are things that I feel like, all we have to simply do is keep up the work that we're doing, because, like I said, we're on the reservation and we're building up horizontally. And when it horizontally affects our communities, it affects our other young ones that are looking for land, looking for the way out, looking for healing. And so, with this hybrid business model of having a 501c3, having an LLC, it allows us to provide opportunity to our producers that want to farm And so that's what we're heading into now. This 2024 season is being able to provide that space, provide that opportunity. So our children are I say children because, they're 30 and under, but they have, when they were inflicted trauma at a certain age, that's the age that they are still at and stuck at. So now we're using these abilities to help them move past that, and grow with that ability of, grow along with their corn, I guess, this season, and then being able to feed the community with that. So yeah, I'm getting a little teary-eyed from that,
The first a full
because
circle.
it's, yeah, exactly. Our, they get to heal, they get to provide meals for their family and their community. And the reason why I'm teary-eyed is because those are experiences we get to have with our 2-year-old and our 6-month-old as we go into the season.
Yes, and those are lifelong memories, that you're cultivating, and then you're also tending and caring for the land and the ancestors. It's just so beautiful. I want to thank you for the work that you do, and when you have those challenging days, just remember that the work that you're doing is not easy. That's why people are not doing it. It's not easy. You have that commitment and determination and vision to do this work, and you have been called, and you're listening to the ancestors to continue this work. So thank you. Where can people find you, and how can they support your work?
Yeah, I think thank you so much for, again, just allowing us to voice our story. And we definitely invite others to, come and be a part of this experience out here on the Navajo Reservation. And so it's for those of you that are looking for that experience, looking for just simply healing or just regrounding yourselves. We're always looking for extra farm hands, of course. Labor is important. It's hard to come by. And I think those are moments that we can definitely share along with, having a good meal that we can provide from the farm together. So to get in contact with us, you can head over to our website at biddybabyfoods.org. You can head over to our Instagram. That's the only source of social media, at Bitty Baby Foods. And our email is our email is bittybabyfoods@gmail.com. And then my personal, not personal, but my work email is Zach Ben. That's Zach with an H, ZACHBEN at bittybabyfoods.org. So yeah, so anywhere you can definitely head over to those areas. You can DM us on Instagram, you can send us an email, and just saying, hey, I'm passing through the Four Corners region. That's in the Southwest. Do you guys have a place to stay? I'm looking to also, contribute some of my manpower, and my energy, I guess. And so, we're definitely open to that. So please, or if you just want to simply, follow our journey, please do so. There's many things to learn. There's many things to heal from. And that's the type of future and environment that we want to provide for our children and our children's children. So it starts now. The work starts now. The action is it starts now. So definitely get in contact with us and see what we can do to, get you on the farm and have that experience so that way you can take that home and teach it.
Thank you. Thank you for these call to action. And I'll make sure to put this on the show notes so folks can go check out your Instagram and follow you and support your work. Can Venmo you, can just there's so many ways that they can continue to support your work. And also thank you for being so generous and opening your home, right, to the community who wants to go. And we've been in conversation, right, on social media, and I'm one of them. And I hope that maybe this year I have that opportunity to go to the reservation and go and help them and be in community. So thank you for this offering. We appreciate it so much.
Thank you. And it was a pleasure to be on the show. And again, just to get our voice out there, get our story out there. So we really enjoyed this episode. So thank you again.
Gracias. Thank you so much, Zach. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. I will see you in the next episode of Dismantling Diet Culture. Fuck being calladita. Nos vemos. Muchas gracias por acompañarme en Dismantling Diet Culture. Fuck being calladita podcast. Be sure to rate, review, and follow the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Especially be sure to rate and review the podcast if you really like it. If you leave me a review on Apple Podcasts, you become eligible for a free 30-minute coaching session. That's right, así como escuchaste, one free session. Once you leave your review, you can screenshot it and email it to me, and I'll send you a link to sign up. If you didn't like it, don't worry, así está bien. Follow me on social media, on Instagram and TikTok, @Dr. Hortensia Jimenez.